Now, these are the broad general principles, but they can be applied in many different ways. We've just time, I think, for a few more details. Then we have to conclude by referring back to the significance of the stupa in the context of the White Lotus Sutra. We can say that a standard stupa can be regarded as consisting of seven parts. There were, of course, very few standard stupas, but if we reduce, as it were, the stupa to its most essential elements, after it had developed for hundreds of years, we find that it can be regarded as consisting of seven essential parts. First of all, there's the square base, called the medhi. This sometimes consists of a number of steps or terraces, very often four. But it still represents the earth element, still represents the yin principle in general. Next comes the hemispherical middle portion. This is known in Sanskrit as the anda. Anda means egg, which is rather interesting. And this portion, this hemispherical middle portion, is also known as the garbha, which means the receptacle, the treasury, and the womb. So, inasmuch as this hemispherical middle portion is called egg and womb, there's obviously quite a bit of symbolism here. In the case of the Sinhalese stupa, which is known as the Dagobha, which is a corruption of Dhatu Garbha, or repository of relics, this portion, the hemispherical middle portion, is not strictly round, not even hemispherical, it's bell-shaped. And this gives the Sinhalese stupas their very distinctive, very characteristic appearance. Now, in Tibetan Buddhism, in the case of the Tibetan Chorten, exactly the opposite seems to be the case. Here, this particular portion doesn't become a bell. It becomes a hemisphere, or even a bell, turned upside down. In other words, in Tibetan Buddhism, in the Chorten, this hemispherical middle portion becomes, or rather assumes, a chalice-like shape, like a sort of vase. And this chalice-like shape of this portion of the stupa is exactly the same as that of the vase of immortality, the Amrita Kalasha, the Bumbha, which is held by Amitayus, the Buddha, of eternal life, and is called, in fact, by the same name. And in Tibetan Buddhism, in the case of the Tibetan Chorten, the fact that this portion of the stupa assumes this particular form represents the receptivity of the lunar principle to the solar principle, the receptivity of yin to yang, or we may say it represents the lunar principle as transformed by the solar principle. And of course, this portion, so far as the elements go, represents or symbolizes the water element, and therefore, once again, the yin principle. Now, thirdly, the standard stupa consists of a cubiform altar, what is known as the harmika. And it's here, incidentally, that relics, bone relics and so on, were usually enshrined in this portion of the stupa. The Buddha's physical body, as we know, had been consumed by fire. And his selfhood, we may say, had also been consumed in the fire of his spiritual practice and realization and experience. So this portion of the stupa, the harmika, the cubiform altar, represents, symbolizes the fire element and, of course, therefore, the yang principle. Then fourthly, the spire, kunta. This is both umbrella and tree. It underwent a very lengthy development and ended up consisting of 13 rings. of diminishing diameter superimposed one upon another, and representing at this stage in the development of the symbolism, representing the 13 bhumis traversed by the bodhisattva on his way to enlightenment. Bhumis meaning stages of spiritual progress. Now there's a rather interesting thing to be noted here, and this pertains to the development of the stupa in China. In China, what happened was that this portion of the stupa, the spire, was separated from the rest and became what we know in the West as the pagoda, a very characteristic feature of the Chinese landscape. The pagoda is just this one portion of the original stupa, just the cone portion, as it were, the original fire portion. So we may say that if the two original geometrical elements of the stupa, the cube and the sphere, were purely yin, as it were, or symbolized the yin principle, the pagoda has gone to the opposite extreme and symbolizes just the yang principle on its own. Yang, as it were, separated from yin. We could perhaps, though, say that the pagoda does, after all, stand actually on the earth. And the earth itself is yin. So that if the stupa, or rather the pagoda, in its attenuated form in China, represents yang, it still maintains a balance and a harmony and unity, inasmuch as it stands on the earth. The earth itself is its base. It doesn't need a separate architectural base. We could look at it in that way. Now, this portion of the stupa, the spire, geometrically considered, represents the fire element. But the fire element has already been represented by the harmika, which has been interpolated. So if you look at the cone or the spire geometrically, you'll have a repetition of fire element symbols. So when the stupa consists of seven elements in this way, the spire stands here not for the fire element but for the air element. But in either case, whether symbolizing fire or air, it still represents yang as distinct from yin. Now, fifthly, we come to the saucer or bowl. Now, this originally represented space or ether, which means a sort of synthesis of yin and yang. But here, when we reckon seven elements, it becomes a pure white moon crescent. And it here symbolizes the yin principle in a highly purified and highly sublimated form. Then sixthly, there comes a red solar disk. And this represents the yang principle in highly purified and sublimated form. And last of all, there comes a flame-coloured or even a rainbow-coloured jewel, which grows out of the red solar disk. And this flame-coloured or rainbow-coloured jewel growing out of the red solar disk represents the final synthesis at the highest possible level of the yin and the yang principles. In other words, it represents enlightenment. So we can now begin to see the basic pattern, the basic structure of this seven-element standard stupa. First come two yin symbols, one on top of the other. Then two yang symbols, one on top of the other, then one yin symbol, then one yang symbol, and finally one symbol synthesizing yin and yang. Now here there's another interesting point. The seventh symbol, the flame-colored jewel, or rainbow-colored jewel, arising out of the red solar disk, this same symbol is often found on the top of the heads of Buddha images of all countries, all periods. Sometimes it looks like a flame springing up from the head of the Buddha. Sometimes it looks like a lotus bud opening from the top of the Buddha's head. And when this sort of shape, this sort of symbol occurs iconographically, At the top of the head of the Buddha image, it's called the Ushnisha, which Western translators render, not very elegantly, as Bodhic protuberance. And it has, when it occurs here, at the top of the Buddha image, the same significance as it has when it occurs at the summit of the stupa. In other words, complete, total, highest possible level synthesis of yin and yang.